Good morning and welcome to the February 15th edition of the Senate Revenue Committee. Today on our agenda, we will have a public hearing on Senate Bill 61, and there's also a possible work session scheduled. So we'll begin with Senate Bill 61, and I'd like to ask our staff to just give us a brief orientation to Senate Bill 61. And so we have Steve approaching with a voluminous background material. And could you share with the committee an orientation to Senate Bill 61?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 61 deals with the measure of extended ADMW. As you recall, the current school distribution formula uses extended ADMW as the higher of the current year or the prior year ADMW. So it's a two-year time frame, and that two-year period is to give districts that have declining enrollments at least a one-year time period to adjust their expenditures for having reduced revenue from declining enrollment. The bill changes the time period that extended ADMW is measured over. It changes it from basically from 2 years to a five-year period, the current year and the prior 4 years. And you have a dash one amendment in your packet this morning that clarifies that over that prior four-year period, it's the highest year within that four-year period that is compared to the current year. So basically, the result is that it's the highest ADMW in the 5 years that would be used as the measure of extended ADMW for the distribution in the current year. The other new information that you have is, one, a revenue impact statement and a table that goes with that revenue impact statement. What I did was to, well, last time you had that table that had the 2, 3, 4, and 5 options and percentages with it, I took the dash one amendments and converted, run that through the formula so that you would have dollars to look at. If you look at that table, you'll see that using the five-year period, it increases the measure of extended ADMW from a little over 643,000 to 654,000 weighted students. That changes the average per extended ADMW from $5,147 down to $5,060, assuming no increase in the state school fund and the state school fund at the governor's budgeted level. The amount of revenue then that shifts is $32.5 million to 114 districts that have experienced declining ADMW over that five-year period. And then that would mean a slight decrease for 84 districts that have had growing ADMW. And then the table lists those changes by district. So you can see both the change in extended ADMW and the dollars for the dash one amendments proposed to Senate Bill 61 compared to current law.
We have more than one proposal in the building having to do with this issue, I believe. And from our discussion yesterday, when we talked about the school funding formula, one of the things that we had noticed is that there was an unfortunate inclusion in some language that was conflicting, I think, and that's what the dash amendments do.
Correct.
Can we talk about the dash one amendments, Steve?
The dash, as the bill was drafted, it reads like that you, to me anyway, that you add up the 4 years, the ADMW for the 4 years to get what you compare to, and that wasn't the intent.
It was to select a five-year period.
Select a five-year period and that have that, the year that you compare the current year to would be the highest within those prior 4 years.
Right, and it had to be the current year plus 4 years.
Yes. And that's the dash one amendment.
All right. Questions, Senator Castillo?
So just so I'm clear on what we're looking at, as we look at these runs are reflective of what SB 61-1 amendments would do under the current formula.
Correct.
Is that correct? So while Salem 24J is not in my district, if I take a look at this, it looks like under this formula, they lose $3.4 million. Is that right?
Correct.
And Gresham Barlow loses $1 million, and there are a lot of big losers under this formula, Mr. Chair. This doesn't...
Well, as we talked about, the issue is trying to extend that cliff away from those folks that have precipitously lost enrollment. We've got some districts where the enrollment's declining. We've always featured a period of time for adjustment, but it's out beyond 18 months they start to lose their programs and their ADNW dollars. What we've tried to talk about in concept is extending that cliff away from the school districts so that they have time to reorganize the programs and so that the community has time to respond to the economic issue. What we've done with this bill is put that proposal forward. We've arrayed the dollar spread looking at the last ADNW. The issue can be characterized as taking money away from growing enrollment areas and giving it to sinking enrollment areas, but that really is inaccurate. What we've done, in a sense, is thinned the soup.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've done is preserved ADNW in areas where you've got out-migration. And so naturally there's going to be a lowering of the, you know, you've basically artificially increased the ADNW, so it's going to lower the ratio of dollars that go to each one of those little units of measurement, each student. But this cannot be taken out of the context of the other issues that this committee has to deal with in the formula, which is how are we also going to balance the needs of rapidly growing mm-hmm. enrollment areas, and how do we array this against the other proposals that are out there, I guess, that would deal with this issue on a two-year, I think we have a two-year, three-year, a four-year version. And so the committee had decided that what we'd do is repair the bill language so that it wasn't adding these years together. That's what the work session is to do this morning. There's no intention to move this bill to the committee this morning. The intention that we've met this morning is to repair the language and give the committee the new numbers. Mm-hmm. That was our intention this morning. So that's what we're about in our public hearing, and that's what we're about with our documents that you have today in front of you. I would not expect the committee to want to move this bill without more careful study.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I guess for me this is the reality check when we do these runs and we tweak the formula and we get the runs. It's the reality check of just how, you know, how serious that can affect certain districts. I just know, once again, I don't represent the Salem area, but if I look at this and then losing $3.4 million, I know in the Salem school district, they're struggling with high dropout rates, you know, huge achievement gaps with minority students. If anything, that district could use more resources to address the needs that are of, you know, to make sure no student is left behind. And taking a look at them, asking them to take $3.4 million less when you look at a run like this, I guess it's just that, you know, I know that I was prepared for the reality check whenever we look at these runs, but then when you look at it in black and white, it's just all that more real of what you do, you know, when you tweak the formula and how it affects various districts.
Hey, I had to get up today and be 50. You know, that's reality for you.
Your flower is lovely.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I will note for the record, the committee has presented me with a beautiful potted plant representing the flower of youth. Thank you, Senator Chair. The point, yeah, and your point's well made. I mean, the fact of the matter is we got to take a look at this stuff and trying to help districts that have had precipitous declines in enrollment through economic dislocations. You know, when we're looking at a zero-sum game, a finite size of the pie, and moving resources, then, you know, whatever we do to help somebody that's got a real serious problem is at the expense of the whole system. So that is a reality.
Unless we put more money in.
Yes, ma'am. And all of those, are you volunteering all of those programs?
Yes.
I understand. So, colleagues, what I'd like to do is ask for a public hearing on Senate Bill 61. We have a witness who signed up who would like to come forward and testify. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 61. I'll call forward Mr. Gary Conkling.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator. Oh, we have a question. Sorry, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Steve. I'm a little confused. When you did the other run, you showed the two-year, three-year, four-year, and five-year extended. In this one, you're not showing that. Is it because you've taken sort of the best possibility for each district? I mean, if the
amendment.
So you've taken just the absolute highest for each one?
I have not taken the best. I don't know what that is.
Well, it'd be the highest. I'm assuming.
What I took was what the original bill's intent was that the dash one amendments reflect in terms of using a five-year period.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, the only thing I want, first of all, you don't look a day over 49. Congratulations on your birthday. Second of all, at least you won't get busted for whatever was in that pot. There's not enough remaining. And thirdly, if you looked at even just what this run shows that kind of struck me, besides the huge variance in winners and losers, is that schools that stay absolutely with no change at all lose money, which I thought was very interesting. And it just seems like a huge, like you look in my Lane County, McKenzie and Marcola have zero change and they lose 40 and 34,000 respectively. Springfield loses 20 and a half ADMWs and they lose almost $1 million. So it's pretty amazing how this, I'm glad Mr. Meyer did this because it really gives us some notion that, that maybe what we're going to end up having to consider. I really see the need to take care of the small school districts that take the bigger hit with the loss of students, because we may have to have some percentage trigger mechanism for having this kick in that would be based on size and percentage of loss of students, because otherwise it seems like you're going to have a huge variance.
We are. We are going to have a huge variance, and in response to your comment, I think we could listen in memory to the testimony from the folks from yesterday who talked about Lake County, which was looking at laying off 8 teachers out of a total of 36.
Right.
And that is in direct result of the decline in enrollment there. So by any triggering mechanism that I can think of on a percentage basis, they'd be at the top of the list for needing help. But anything that we do is systemic. If we artificially increase the number of ADMW, or student population, which is what this does, by allowing people to count kids that really aren't in their system, but for whom they have no way to maintain the rest of the programs if they don't have a mechanism like that, it basically inflates the number of kids, and that lowers the formula for all kids. So even a school district that maintains equal enrollment is going to see a decline in the distribution dollars. Let's see if Mr. Conkling can shed some additional perspective on this issue, and we'll ask for his testimony now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Gary Conkling, here today representing the Beaverton and Hillsborough school districts. And I was not here the other day when you engaged in part of your conversation over Senate Bill 61 relating to formula management issues, which is the reason why I came up today. But since I noticed these runs, I'd be remiss if I didn't note that a substantial percentage of the shift that you've just discussed comes from the two school districts that I represent, which, if my math is somewhere correct, is a little bit in the neighborhood of about $5 million or more than $5 million money shifted out of our districts. And we, of course, are the districts that have the precipitous increase, much like farmers. We lose money on every sale and make it up in volume. The Beaverton School District, as you've heard, adds on average about 1,000 kids a year. And we long ago ran out of room, so we've been making it up as we go and trying to keep pace. So I appreciate the dilemma that you have. And on the general subject of formula modifications, would associate with what Ozzie Rose indicated yesterday. I can't remember if it was here or somewhere. I think it was here, where he noted that it probably is useful to really put side by side all of the proposals, whether they're for declining districts or growth districts or regional cost of living or whatever the particular issue is. And I certainly am no stranger to those wars myself. I think there are a fair number of legitimate concerns in terms of evaluating the formula, but at least putting them side by side so you can evaluate their individual and then collective effects on individual school districts. But, Mr. Chair, the real point that I wanted to talk about today was less to carp about this than to note that before you get to the formula, there is another issue that does impact districts, and it has, at least in the experience of Beaverton and Hillsborough, a particularly adverse impact on growing districts, and that is the estimation of student enrollment itself. Now, this is not a subject really of weighting the kids. It's whether or not you're accurately predicting how many of them you're going to have. And if I understand correctly, and I certainly am willing to be corrected, but that in effect the estimates of enrollment that you use are largely individually developed by school districts. There isn't necessarily a standard way that these enrollment projections are brought forward. And so at least a tendency that appears to be observable is that school districts under-project their enrollment. And the evidence of that is your own District Z, I believe it is, or the Dummies District at the very bottom of the list, that isn't anybody's in particular, but that sort of incorporates all of the projections of students that you believe will be in the system, so you're running the numbers fairly accurately, but aren't allocated to particular districts. In discussions with legislative revenue, my colleague, the former chairman of the House Revenue Committee, and myself have tried to offer some suggestions, and we, in fact, have a bill that hasn't materialized yet from legislative counsel, that would perhaps create a more standard mechanism by which you could project enrollment and therefore base your runs, your numbers, on data that is probably not going to be 100% accurate, but at least more standard from district to district. And for the rapidly growing districts, what would be useful for us is to have projections that more accurately reflect the percentage of growth that we typically experience, and may also require other considerations of what do you do when you have a true-up later in a year. As it turns out, for rapidly growing districts, the pattern that once upon a time that you would have a higher enrollment in the fall and a lower one in the spring, which caused some people to not want to overestimate, doesn't tend to be the pattern that we have. We have, and this is certainly true in Beaverton and to a lesser extent in Hillsborough, we continue to grow every month of the year, through the year, so that, interestingly enough, in most school years, we now have more students enrolled in the spring than we had in the fall, which is somewhat opposite the trends. But in any case, it's a suggestion that I know you had, if I understood correctly, a bit of a discussion about the formula management before you really get to the weights and factors. And I just wanted to indicate that at least we've given that some thought and have some language or have a consideration, or excuse me, have a bill for your consideration when you get to looking at that. If that's something that you would like to do, I'd be glad to bring forward that language.
Mr. Vice Chair, did you have a question or comment?
Maybe.
Please?
Gary, thinking through that, the issue of when the growth occurs and projecting that is really one, it's only important, I think, and I appreciate your comment, it's only important in the springtime when the district is preparing its budget. I mean, because the reality is once you decide how many classrooms you're going to have, whether it's adding portables or new schools, once you have the classrooms and you've signed teachers' contracts, you're not going to add classrooms, you're not going to add teachers. You're going to live with that through the year until you get into the next year. And the reverse of that, I think, is also true, is if you sign contracts with teachers and incur that cost and you don't have as many students, you're not going to lay them off. You've got to live with that cost through the year. There's not a lot of fluctuation. I think 80% of the school district's budgets are really teacher salaries. And that seems to be the critical point, but I would agree with you. It's the growth through the year isn't... It's a problem, but it's one that's handled by what we call management.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that's correct. I think your analysis is right. But the notion that somehow the problems of rapidly growing districts is satisfied because we get increased ADMW support for students. The point I'm making is that sometimes we don't get those dollars until 9 months after we have the student, and the marginal cost of the teacher, of the desk, of the book, of the extra school bus, of the portable, of the system development charge, are all expenses that we incur and we pay, and they are usually cash payments that come out of our working capital, in fact, our operating funds. So this is an argument that we've made that in addition to the capital costs that we have to house increasing student enrollments, we have a marginal cost based on the students that are coming that by and by get reimbursed at whatever the level is, but usually after, substantially after, we have the cash flow hit of paying for many of the expenses to accommodate. The formula, if it underprojects our enrollment, exacerbates the problem because we are getting essentially less payment even when we are receiving it than might otherwise. So that's the reason for at least looking at a more standard approach to enrollment projection.
Questions? Senator George.
Gary, looking at the numbers, you folks are $196.5 million. It's about a 1.5% decrease in the total revenue available. How does that $196 million compare with, say, the current dollars that are coming to the district? Because when we look at the for ADMW, that looks like a substantial increase based on the governor's proposed budget over where we are at the current budget, $4.811 billion.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it is an increase, and I apologize this morning. I didn't come, and I didn't have that number right at my command. You probably have it in your own research. Part of what's going on in our district, of course, is that a lot of our numbers are driven up because of the enrollment's up, and that's also true for Hillsborough. These are two of the most rapidly growing districts in the state, Beaverton, if I understand correctly, I guess I'd have to look exactly at the numbers, I think is now actually surpassed Salem as the second largest district, and we're continuing to grow. The demographic projections don't really show any curtailment. So if the point is, are we getting more money than we had before? Yes. We're getting more students, too.
$40,000, that was a pretty major number. Thank you.
I've got two questions for you, Mr. Conkling. I understand your argument in both cases that we should, in fact, put our bills that deal with the issue of rapidly decreasing or increasing or declining enrollment side by side. We should do that, and I think that's the intent of the committee. But relative to the testimony that you made on a bill that may be yet coming to this committee, Your plea basically is for more accurate estimations by the state to establish what the ADMW is. But if they are more accurate, won't they in fact be larger, since there's a tendency to underestimate?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct. I'm not sure I understand exactly how we have the system that we have today, in all fairness. It strikes me that you could impose upon the department or your own staff a greater workload by trying to individually analyze each of the school districts. At least I think the conception that we came up with was to use an arithmetic formula that will probably accurately create a number factor, if I can use that analogy, based on perhaps the prior 3 years. So if you were growing at a certain percentage rate, you could use that percentage factor. And if you were declining, you could also use that factor. These aren't prejudicial to what you might do in the weights and factors to accommodate for either the increase or decrease. These are only meant to give you a more accurate number probably from the declining district point of view, especially if you have a greater extended period, won't be all that consequential for them. but for the growth districts, it may be consequential. Because if we have chronic under-projection, that does work its way out into underfunding.
Well, I understand. I guess the equation that, well, first of all, we shouldn't spend very much time talking about a bill we don't have in front of us, if at all. But the fact of the matter is, if the same equation follows, a better, more accurate, larger estimate of ADNW lowers the per capita distribution, just as it does in this bill that we do have before us, Senate Bill 61, and I'm wondering if those things aren't self-canceling. We can talk about that on another day, I think. Bring your bill forward whenever it emerges from legislative council or wherever, whatever little nook or cranny it's edited into, and then we'll put that in context with your earlier testimony, which is don't do anything precipitous on these adjustments until we've got all this stuff side by side. I think that's the genius of your testimony today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's hardly genius, and I
was thinking that myself as soon as I said
that. I was trying to be generous.
It's my birthday.
All of my colleagues behind me could have said amen to that comment, yours, but I would only want to say that if you want to be precipitous, I certainly would be glad to give you a bill to be precipitous on that would help my districts, and that'd be fine to be precipitous on that.
Understood. Any final questions that are relevant for starting hearing and seeing then? Is there anybody else here present that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 61? Again, we're going to go into work session on this bill, but only to amend in the -1 amendments, redistribute this document, which is the spreadsheets that show what the extended ADMW does with a 5-year window. Any other questions? Hearing and seeing none. Public hearing is closed. Work session is open.
Mr. Chair, move the -1 amendments.
-1 amendments are moved. Colleagues, one more time. The perceptive analysis of our fiscal staff indicates that there's an ambiguity written into the first draft. It's been corrected to give us more focus on the intent of this bill, which is to create a 5-year rolling window. If there's any questions on the -1s, ask them now. If Senator Minnis.
Mr. Chairman, just to state my objection.
Yes, sir. So noted. Any other questions on the -1 amendments? Then,
can I just make a comment? I'm going to go ahead and support the amendments to help with getting the, you know, original intent of the bill more clear on the record. However, I am very concerned about what these look like.
Yep. And I think we, as well we should be. The point is, if we're trying to help those that, we don't want to see a wreck in some small school district.
Yeah,
that's a worthy and intelligent thing to be concerned about. We should also understand there's a wreck at the other end of the spectrum with rapidly increasing school districts. Let's go ahead and call the roll on the -1s. We have the Vice Chair has moved the -1 amendments. Shall we call the roll on the -1s, please?
Aye.
Corcoran.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Minnis.
No.
Barr.
Aye.
Fire.
Aye.
Barry. Aye. Motion passes. The -1s are adopted. We're questions on the bill. Let me go ahead and close the work session. Work session is closed on Senate Bill 61. We're still in public hearing. Senator Beyer.
Just a comment, and I'm glad that we're starting to get these things all sort of racked up side by side here, but I think, as I sat here and listened the last few days, there's legitimate concerns from the smaller communities about the closures there, but I have to tell you that it's not just in the smaller communities. In my community, one of the larger ones, the Eugene School District, where Senator Castile and I represent, actually Senator Kirkland too, announced this morning a list of closures of 6 schools and the potential closure of an additional 4 there. Springfield School District, which I also represent, is looking at the potential closure of 1 or 2 schools. In both the Springfield case and the Eugene case, one of the districts or one of the schools that is being closed proposed for closure in Springfield is in Coburg, which is not in Eugene. It's about 7 miles out of Eugene, and that would be the only school, much like the other rural ones, that they would lose. Springfield has 3 rural schools that are outside of the city in rural Lane County, and those are the ones that they're looking at closure. So it's in the same places, and I think Springfield is more of a level, has been more of a level. district, and Eugene has seen a decreasing one. So it's not just my point. It's not just the small rural schools.
Senator, I'm going to ask you to do something for the committee, and it's just sort of an aside, but I think it may help us. If Springfield has a not experienced rapidly declining population, although arguably it had a steady growth in population for a decade, are these changes driven by the desire for the administration in the school district to be more efficient? Is it that they're aging facilities that they don't want to keep open? Is it that they're replacing these for some particular change in population pattern? It'd be helpful for the committee, I think, to know, you know, what's behind the decisions to consolidate or close within an area where I think the population arguably is stable or even increasing. If you could bring that back. And Senator Corcoran, did you have
something? Mr. Chair, I think it'd be really helpful to have someone like John Van Landingham come up and walk us through the decision-making process for 4J. They had a 200-student enrollment drop, and as a result, that made the decision on these four schools. And I think it's primarily efficiency because they certainly didn't target specific neighborhood schools. I mean, Coburg ended up, along with some other schools and some diminishing population areas of young kids in Eugene. So I think it was demographics and efficiency that drove it. But just observing it in the papers, it seemed like they did a really exhaustive objective analysis in coming to the decision they did. I just wanted, as a vote explanation, to state for the record that I'm happy to do this as a courtesy to move the bill on, but this doesn't fly at this point. And I really, again, want to reiterate what Gary said and Ozzie, and really try to have, I think it might be really helpful to do some sort of joint committee work with the House and look side by side at these proposed changes and to get some sense of winners and losers, or if ultimately we do all this manipulation and it all balances out, which is highly unlikely. But I just think that would be a helpful exercise, because I'm really concerned that I know you and the House Revenue Chair are talking, but I think the Vice Chairs clearly should be involved in those discussions, because that gives you a pretty rounded group, that foursome of sort of education concerns in the state.
Senator Corcoran, the Chair, sincerely appreciate your courtesy vote on moving this forward. I agree. I think we need to get more folks rather than fewer engaged in the process, and I would gather that every single member of the committees on both the Senate and the House would appreciate a side-by-side comparison. They're all going to be required to vote. They're all going to be interested in these issues. So I'll talk to the House Chair about when we can get together and maybe have an orientation to all these bills, because we're all going to need to hear them, and we may as well discuss them sort of a round table. The other issues, I do understand everyone's concern here. You know, no good deed ever goes unpunished. We definitely have heard the concept that we need a floor under small schools, and we've heard the concept that we cannot let those schools that have been the target of rapid increases flounder with kids sitting in hallways. And, you know, I've seen instances where auditoriums have classrooms going on the stage and in the proscenium arch because of rapidly increasing enrollments. And it's not a privation. It's the fact that it's just doggone inconvenient, and it's a distraction from the business of education. In fact, it can be a hardship on the kids and the administration. Let's get them side by side and look what we can do. If, in fact, as Mr. Rose indicates, that in the larger sense, looking at these formulas, they all tend to be self-canceling changes that we'd make, then we're going to have to go back to districts and explain, you know, that we're really helping them by doing nothing for them. I'm not really sure they're willing to accept that, but we'll.
That's why the federal forest money always comes to mind when you say that. I don't care if it's $1 difference, as long as we tell the public and do what the feds intended on that bill, then I think we're, you know, if it does end up all, I mean, Steve warned me about this the first time I went in to talk to him, you know, if it all ends up being darn near a push.
Yes.
There's still the notion that, you know, we've done what the federal bill intended.
And that may weigh into future considerations when we
yep.
need to go with our tin cup back to Congress. Colleagues, I think the issue on Senate Bill 61 is closed. Let's go ahead and close the public hearing on 61. Do we have other business before the committee? This one?
No, there's no other new information that I have to provide on the other two bills, and I don't, no one signed up for 260 or 519, I don't think, unless reasons.
Mr. Vice Chair, did you have a comment that you wanted to add for the record there? None? Okay. Senator Corcoran, I think your admonition that we try to get these more inputs on these things is fine. I would hate to have all of the work of the legislature analogous to a pinball machine where apparently there's a lot going on, lights are flashing, the ball's moving around, but in fact nothing's really happening. We do have...
Not even scoring. Good point.
Well, you're speaking for me and yourself, I'm sure. Mr. Vice Chair, did you have something here?
Just an observation, that having gone through this about five times before, mm-hmm. Interesting watching the rest of the committee who hasn't done this before go through this. It's not easy, and I think as our staff has told us, this, you know, it's one of those things. It's not easy to make these changes.
Senator Barrett, maybe deja vu all over again, but I insist that we go ahead and give this a good effort. I mean, the point is we do have precipitous declines and increases. We need to look at the full suite of options. And just essentially do the best we can for the most number of people. And on that happy note, I'm going to take my little dead plant and adjourn this committee. We are in adjournment.